You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Welcome to this economy podcast, proudly brought to you by sharenet.co.za. On the telephone with me is the MD of ETM Analytics in Johannesburg, and that's George Glinos. And we're going to talk about something with which we are all familiar and becoming more and more familiar and more irritated by, I would think, and that's the Eskom crisis. And it says on fin24.com, George Glinos, there's a little quote there underneath a video, embedded video of Pravin Gordhan. And it says here, we'll get it right in a year or two, Gordhan on Eskom. Just before we get into that, how annoyed are you as a South African and a businessman about this? Are you getting more angry like people on Twitter are, or you're becoming resigned to the fact that this is the most monumental disaster in South Africa's recent history?
I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, I probably stand about at close to 100. If not more. I'm probably fed up. It's increasingly difficult to conduct business in this manner. It's quite obvious that business itself has gone into survival mode more than it has into anything remotely approaching growth mode. The unfortunate reality is that there will be severe impacts of this that will permeate across the economic spectrum. This has gone way beyond just impacting on large industrial companies that require big energy consumption. This is now going to affect pretty much across the board, from small companies that require fridges and computers to run all the way through to your big multinationals. And I think the impact is quite devastating. I mean, aside from the fact that you've got a colossal amount of time that's wasted through just pure inefficiency, you now have the added cost of having to fend for yourself. So whether that be purchasing of photovoltaic cells or whether it be diesel generators or whatever it may be, green fuel, I've heard it all. These are costs that companies are having to undertake just so that they can remain remotely productive. Even households are now resorting to backup generators. Well, they've done that for a while, but it's UPSs, it's backup generators. These are all costs that, fine, might be helping those companies, but it's not an expense that's going towards productivity. It's in fact just to help us stand still, never mind go backwards, which is generally the accepted outcome that we're seeing at the moment. So no, it's monumental. It's in economic terms, it is a catastrophe of sorts, and unfortunately it's going to impact on the poorest, as it always does. The most.
Yeah, and the most vulnerable. Never mind all the things you've just said. What about hospitals? If there is a national blackout, we're one step away from being Venezuela. And I can't quite understand why the rand is sort of merrily trading away close to 1450. If I was an international investor, I'd say, actually, no, that money that I put there last year, I gave them the benefit of the doubt. I think I'm going to bring it out now just until the Eskom situation in a year or two sorts itself out. Because the extended Gordhan quote, it says, is as follows, excuse me. We are a recovering democratic government, and load shedding is the result in that. We'll get it right in the next year or two. And the person that wrote this, whose name is Will Ridge from Investec, says that's the best we can come up with 27,000 question marks afterwards. It is quite extraordinary. I'd like to go through the piece that he sent me, George, because it's the sort of point form that I can understand. It says, of the current 45K megawatt of generation, 38% is out due to breakdowns. 38% is out due to breakdowns. 7 generating units are currently out of the system due to boiler tube leaks. This is the single biggest cause of plant breakdowns. Forgive me for being stupid, but if this is in China, wouldn't they get a boiler tube leak man to come round and fix them?
One would think so. But those boiler tube leaks are actually pretty much a direct result of having a very substandard coal that has got many impurities that, once blasted into the furnaces and whatever, explode, and they create that damage, or they create a tremendous amount of erosion, and pipes that should be lasting a hell of a lot longer than they do are catching the engineers by surprise, and so. That's where a lot of the maintenance is going towards. It's just is fixing up things that shouldn't be going wrong because we're using very substandard coal, and the substandard coal is being utilized because it's cheaper than the high-grade coal, and the cheaper coal is being utilized because Eskom doesn't have funding, or they've run themselves so poorly that they can't afford it, and they can't afford it because they're a company that's overstaffed by more than 60%, and they can't retrench because the unions threaten that they are effectively going to strike, and the unions strike because they have as much power as they do within the tripartite alliance. So, I mean, this is a cocktail of the worst kind, and it seems like an almost insurmountable situation. And I almost sometimes feel like South Africa deserves, in a sense, a complete and utter blackout so that people realize just how precarious the situation is. Of course, I don't want it to get there, but in some instances, it's that kind of a wake-up call that people need to appreciate just how serious this actually is at the end of the day. I mean, talking about stage 5 and 6 load shedding today, planning for that, I mean, what is going on here? I mean, this is going from a catastrophe to outright annihilation of an economy. I mean, if we manage to escape out of the first quarter, maybe the second quarter, at the rate we're going, without having another recession, it's going to be a small miracle.
Yeah, I mean, all these predictions I see of 1.2 up to as high as 1.5% GDP growth for 2019. Sorry, lads and ladies, out of the window. Go back to your models and redo it, please. 7K megawatts. In other words, 41% of the above outages that I talked of earlier on in the conversation are planned outages. More than half of Eskom's generation is now more than 37 years old. Major midlife refurbishment is required and has not been implemented due to financial constraints. So it goes back way before the ANC, and it goes back to an arrogant apartheid government which said there's no way that there'll be a black middle class that's going to need any more power generation to light their homes, etc. It's just pathetic what has happened over the last 4 decades.
But you know, Lindsay, I don't even buy that story so much, because Medupi should have come on stream a long time ago. And if Medupi had been running as it should have been running to full capacity, we wouldn't be having this discussion at all right now. We'd have more than enough power. The reality is that Medupi was supposed to be the savior of Eskom in a way, as was Kusile. The two of them are far more efficient than all of those 30-plus production units combined. And so there would have been a massive cost saving. There would have been a centralized production source that would have been maintained at a far lower cost. So we're resorting to utilizing these old production units purely because of the failure of the modern government, not because of what happened in the past. This has happened under the current ANC government's watch. It didn't need to be this way. What we've encountered is maladministration of biblical proportions, and we're now sitting with a situation where the whole dug is just so deep, from a financial, a skill set, a cost base, a maintenance base. All of these problems are so massive in their magnitude that it seems almost insurmountable. So it's going to take an extraordinary effort to turn this all around. And so when Pravin Gordhan talks about a year or two, it's probably the most honest statement that we've heard in a hell of a long time. I think it will probably take at least that. But even then, we're assuming that we're going to be able to get Medupi and Kusile online. And as it stands right now, we're borrowing from Kusile to keep Medupi running. And that in and of itself is telling you how backwards we are going.
Okay, one of the things that this chap who wrote this report says, his second to last point, says they are investigating whether to complete Kusile. And he says, again, unreal, with 27,000 exclamation marks. A few more points here. The CEO says, sorry, Gordhan says, similarly, that there's a lot of money being moved from maintenance to capital expenditure. And he says, and this is a direct quote, there's still a lot of accountability to take place. Oh, really? The CEO of Eskom says this morning at the media briefing, they have bought between 20 and 25 million litres of diesel for emergency gas turbines. They have exhausted that supply. There's no diesel in South Africa except for cars and small utilities. Gas turbines are now out of action and hence the blackouts. And on the diesel topic, Bloomberg reports the following from spokesperson Kulu Pasiwe. The company is also spending large amounts of money on diesel to run turbines designed to peak use. It's used 4.6 billion rand to buy diesel this financial year, well above the 670 million which was accounted for. Just a small overshoot of 4 billion rand, George Glinos. I can't believe I'm reading this, actually. In fact, I wish the lights were out so I couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I think the point repeatedly needs to be made that at the moment that all they're doing is fighting fires. They absolutely do need to get Kusile up and running. They absolutely need to finish it. It's the reason why you would be able to decommission the inefficient productive units that you were referring to a little bit earlier, and it would be a way of reducing the cost structure of Eskom quite significantly. So, you know, I think what they're referring to there is that they need to spend money currently on maintenance purely because the maintenance will help them get some of the old defunct mothballed units running to some degree, which will produce some electricity. Waiting for Kusile is going to take us years. And it's capital expenditure that's going to yield us no electricity return, not for a long, long time. So right now they're fighting fires, and I think that's the point of that statement, is that we're fighting fires by spending on diesel generators, by keeping plants that should have been mothballed up and alive just so that they can produce the little that they can, all so that we can try and get a little bit closer to what the installed electricity production capacity in the country is, which is, as you pointed out, in fact, I think it's slightly more than 45,000 megawatts. At the moment, we're battling to generate 25. So there's a huge gap there, and quite clearly, the maintenance is a massive issue. But part of that maintenance being an issue is the substandard coal. And until we start fixing the root cause, which would be buying better quality coal that wouldn't do as much damage to these boilers, well, we're going to continue down this road.
I think for once I'm not going to get moaned about for being such a curmudgeon and moaning on about South Africa, because in this case, I think everybody is united. This is a disaster. And I just want to read you the last paragraph, because let's turn this disaster into something maybe positive and try and make some money out of it. The global carry trade Fed puts risk assets and the South African rand on the map, but this won't last for long, this chap says. The quantum of this problem is too large for the big global asset allocators to ignore. The commentary from South African corporates is uniformly bearish. Banks have held up well, and I'd be leaning heavily on the sector post this call. Leaning on the sector means selling it. As I've mentioned a couple of times previously, the South African GDP story is very dependent on a corporate lead recovery, and there's not a single company that will read the above and think that this is a great time to invest or add headcount. Downgrades to the GDP outlook to follow. Moody's now has to be firmly in play on the 29th. Good luck out there. Quite nicely put, George. Can you add to that?
No, but life is never as simple as all that. So that would, I would say that would be a very logical straight line assessment of causality on how it might all play out. You asked an interesting question right at the beginning of this interview. You said it's amazing how the rand has held up as well as it has. Why has the rand held up as well as it has? And here comes some of the more complicated aspects to the question of whether there's value to be found.
Yes.
For starters, many of these financial markets tend to price things long ahead of schedule. The issue of Eskom has been telegraphed to us over recent months. Perhaps one could argue that no one realized it was quite as bad, and ultimately one can argue that the ultimate impact is still a negative one, and you'd be correct. But along with that negative impact also comes a reduction in the demand for imports. And it's quite interesting to note how in times of economic difficulty, you can sometimes find the rand holding up a hell of a lot better than people anticipate. In fact, sometimes it can behave completely counterintuitively, because the trade account swings back into a surplus position. purely on account of a very weak growth climate and, yes, and weak demand for South African imports. So that's the first thing to say, is that Rand doesn't necessarily have to blow off in a terrible economic climate. It can sometimes prove a lot more resilient. And it's almost as a result of that that you get an inflation environment that remains relatively benign. And so when you have a look at bond yields that are yielding north of 9.5% in some cases, and you've got an inflation rate closer to 4%, and you've got a real interest rate of 5.5%, if you're looking for some sort of a defensive play and you're trying to take a positive spin out of all of this, well, it might just rest in the bond market and the fact that exposing oneself to the bond market, given that so much of this negative news is now surely priced in, including the Moody's decision at the end of the month, then there might be a play here to expose a portfolio to an increasing quantity of bonds. And so, you know, we slightly overweight in the investment committee that I'm part of. We slightly overweight bonds, and we've done it for this very reason. So, interestingly, despite all this doom and gloom, you can still find pockets of value. I suspect one of those pockets of value might be bonds. Even if they do sell off a little bit, the question is, asymmetrically speaking, how much more are they likely to sell off given how much has been priced in versus how much they stand to gain should the rand indeed not sell off, or the dollar, in fact, sells off itself because of Fed has turned dovish?
I can't help but think that if the emerging market currency basket starts to look a little bit vulnerable and the whole carry trade play starts to, the enthusiasm for the carry trade play starts to dissipate, that somebody is going to attack the rand. And the long term factors that you just spoke of are very, very valid. But I can't help thinking, given the rand's behavior over the last couple of decades, that we might get one of those 1450 to 1650s, a brief moment in time. But I can't think that it's not a dripping roast for bearish hedge funds at some point.
Yeah, so it's difficult to argue with that because the rand's volatility speaks for itself. I mean, it's been empirically one of your most volatile currencies in the world, and it does indeed react very negatively. I think it's more a case of what sort of time frames you're looking at, and whether you're going to be thinking about it in a very short-term tactical sense, in other words, through the course of the remainder of this year, or if you're talking a little bit further out. Mm. Further out, we're unquestionably bearish on Rand for exactly that reason, because we do believe that the global business cycle is coming to an end and that the emerging markets are going to respond negatively to that in time. For now, though, Rand and bonds could surprise. And I think that's the only message that I would bring to this discussion is not to be blindly optimistic just because foreigners might see some value in high yields and a rand that remains resilient, but more to play it on a tactical versus longer term strategic basis.
Brilliant stuff. The reasoned voice of George Glenos, who's the MD of ETM Analytics in Johannesburg. And that was The Economy, proudly brought to you by sharenet.co.za.